episode 136 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded June 7th, 2017. Leftovers. Got a big week this week, Randy.
It's ATX Fest time.
ATX year 5!
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, ATX TV Fest is always fun. We've been going since year one, right? We've always been.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, like, I told someone, like, I've been going since year one. They're like, oh, your name should be on the special donor list, right? I was like, no, I was pressed. Like, I've gotten it free every
but
time.
But I've paid every year.
Oh, yeah? Were you on the donor list?
Except for the first year.
Okay, see?
It might be.
Yeah, but it is an awesome fest here in town,
yeah.
And next week's episode is probably heavily going to be about that.
Oh yeah, we're gonna have all kinds of coverage, and the shows this year. I mean, every year is great. Last year they had a pretty fantastic show, like the best show. Terriers was there last year.
They had Terriers,
but this year
they had Sean Ryan. They're talking about like Sons of Anarchy with Kurt Sutter. They had The West Wing.
This year, the wrap up of The Leftovers.
Oh yeah.
They had
it last year. I got to shake Damon Lindelof's hand. I took a picture of my hand afterwards.
Alias Writers Room Reunion, which I'm super psyched about. I'm going to get to interview a couple of those guys.
Yeah.
There's
Fargo.
Fargo. Yeah, which
Americans.
Is great. The Americans.
Oh, man.
It's and there's always new shows. Like, they're showing that show Ghosted, which we're kind of curious about from Fox.
Ghosted? Glow? The new
And Allison
Netflix.
Allison Brie's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
She's
probably got better eyes at us.
The new FX show Snowfall.
I'm going to bat my eyes at her.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And then I'm going to do some cocaine.
Snowfall. And Les isn't here tonight because he's prepping for his, like, 3,000 interviews he's doing.
Yeah, dude.
That guy jumped in with both feet.
Gung-ho.
Yeah. So that's going to be exciting. There'll be lots of interviews from Les.
I didn't get any interviews. I think you only got, like, one.
I got one, and it's Les's slappy seconds that he couldn't make time for, so he handed it off to me.
Yeah,
so,
it's weird because, like, last year you had so many interviews.
I had a ton of interviews. This year, just kind of the timing didn't work out. There were people I wanted to interview. I wanted to talk to the guys from Room 104, the guys from
Together. Oh, Mark Duplass.
Yeah, Mark Duplass. I was super excited, but I got a hard no. They were just, he's not going to be there that long. So
I think a lot of people just kind of go in and then they get out of there.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is so exciting.
But yeah, I'm super excited to do it. And yeah, it's 4 days of TV camp is what they call it.
We were talking because we're recording this episode a little bit early this week. And last week we were talking about, should we just like try and record a little, like skip this week because we're going to be doing ATX Fest? I think you said that.
Yep.
And I was like, Randy, the finale of The Leftovers is this week. If you think I'm not going to be doing an episode talking about that finale, you are so dead wrong.
You would have done that if I wasn't here.
Oh, man, that finale, guys. We're going to be talking about that finale. Hey, by the way.
One last ATX thing.
Okay, good.
Trivia.
Oh, yes.
This is the second year for trivia.
That's
last year,
night.
We were just outside of first, like by one question. We tied for second.
You don't think we're going to get close this year, do you?
Oh, no. We're going to get stomped this year.
We don't have Greg.
We don't have Greg. We have no one who knows anything from the 70s at this point.
Greg, if you're a newer listener, Greg is the original TV dude alongside you and me.
Yep.
And he abandoned us for sunnier pastures out in L.A.
Yep.
He's living the awesome life. Every time I look on his Instagram, I'm like, dude, that looks amazing
there. That dude's enjoying himself. But yeah, he brought so much knowledge to like the 70s stuff that I didn't have.
Everything.
Yeah.
Except for
the one thing you corrected me on that would have gotten a second place or first place.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's funny.
But yeah, no, super looking forward to that. The TV dudes will represent. We have to think, we do this podcast. We ought to be able to come in pretty high at those.
I added nothing to our team, I think. So I'm excited for it anyway, but yeah, we'll see how we do. Les seems to know a shit ton of stuff.
We'll be good.
We'll be okay. Yes, so I wanted to mention, though, we were talking about The Leftovers, and first off, I need to give a shout-out to our listener, Alec Miracle, who, long-time listener, he's written some questions to us. He wrote a really nice review over on his page on Facebook. And he kind of like pointed it out to me. I was like, oh, this is great. I just wanted to, point people to his page. If you guys want to go check out his review of The Leftovers, I had a little snippet up here pulled up I thought I was going to read. And he starts it off, "What can I say that hasn't already been said about The Leftovers Season 1 and 2? It's the show nobody is watching. It's not underrated. It's underviewed. It is a show that can be enjoyed by everyone. It's not too in-your-face about religion or apocalyptic ideals. And when we see the departure, the moment the 2% of the world's population disappeared, and we see the reaction of several people whose children, parents, friends, all gone, it's distressful and wrenching. The first season of the first scene of the second season is heartbreaking, foreshadowing events to come. Season 2's emotional impact has made my jaw drop, literally drop, and continue to do so through season 3 with literally every episode." Anyway, he writes a really nice write-up about it, and I just wanted to point people out to it. Alec Miracle, I should have had his page already pulled up so you guys can go check it out. He made a little public post on it. But Facebook.com, Alec, A-L-E-C dot Miracle, M-A-R-M-I-R-A-C-L-E. I can spell. I can spell, Randy. Don't look at me like that.
You still beat our president.
Anyway, I can still be the president. ouch. Low bar. Anyway, I also wanted to point out that, you know, while we're mentioning Greg, our OG TV dude, our other early on TV dude, Johnny, was talking about the greatness of this finale, and he posted on he was writing a comment about it, and he tried to describe what the show is to a friend of ours, and he said, "It's a great examination on irreconcilable grief and how it manifests itself in depression and anger." Basically, that was Johnny's pitch for the show Leftovers.
He's not wrong.
And I'm like, yeah, he's not wrong about that description, but that's the most depressing way to describe it.
Do you know how I would describe it?
What?
It's a show that features a lion sex cult.
That's a way to describe exactly. It, my friend.
But you know what, though? I'm just going to disappoint people. If they started season one, they're like,
where's this lion sex cult?
It's going to be like that Simpsons thing where, like, when are they going to the fireworks factory? When do they get to the lion sex cult? It's not until late in season 3.
Who is Gabbo?
Who's Gabbo?
Oh, man. Yeah. I just read that and I was like, oh, that's so great. That's so Johnny, but jeez. Yeah. We're going to be talking about The Leftovers. We're also going to be checking in on Fargo and Better Call Saul.
Yep.
One of those is your favorite show of the year so far.
Yes. Although I'm not sure which one. It keeps going back and forth.
I know. That's what's interesting about that. Toggling there.
Although I'm not sure because Legion could overtake it.
Oh, man.
So it's
a lot of competition.
It's a good year for TV.
And for Noah Hawley, your boyfriend.
My boy Noah Hawley.
We are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And before we get into all that, I want to say, hey, if you guys are liking this show, if you want to help us out, go over to patreon.com/TV Dudes. There you can make a per episode pledge. Give us a dollar an episode. You only get charged if we release an episode. And in exchange, we do bonus exclusive content, which means that we do little mini, like 30-minute podcasts, sometimes less, talking about particular topics that don't really fall under the umbrella of TV discussion. This week, we're going to be talking about the Wonder Woman movie because we both saw it.
Yep.
And I'm excited to discuss that with you because you also have a bunch of background comic knowledge.
Right. So. And I've been down on DC for the longest time. So.
Yeah. So your comeuppance is due.
Yep.
I think we both enjoyed that film.
Yep.
Anyway, thank you to all the patrons that have already signed up and to all of you guys considering whether or not you should do it.
Just do it.
Help us out. We got some exciting news I believe we're going to be announcing next week, but I'm going to hold on to that. And there are no other ways you can help us out?
Yes, there actually is another way people... I feel like you need to change this up, Grant. So the Patreon is one way you contribute. If you contribute monetarily, that helps us. Helps with our equipment, helps with our studio that we're going to be coming live from. Not live from. We're coming from next episode.
Well, that was a surprise I was going to tell people.
Oh, I wrecked it.
But that's okay. I wrecked it. We have a studio, guys.
Yeah, we have a studio. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And not only that, helps us, get everybody to ATX Fest and get new equipment like the microphones that Les and I are going to be using for interviews.
Yeah.
Like, you guys help us out monetarily. That's a great way to do it. However, if you cannot support us monetarily,
the shit eating grin you get all
there
time.
Are other ways you can support us. And here's one way. Fried chicken.
What?
Who doesn't love fried chicken?
I mean, everyone loves fried chicken. So what are you talking about?
If you want to support us by means of fried chicken, you could just mail us some fried chicken.
No.
No?
Randy,
is that
gross.
A bad idea?
No.
Is that a bad idea?
I feel like this is a health hazard.
Yeah, you're right.
Someone ships it internationally.
Yeah.
We're going to get some
you're right.
nappy ass moldy chicken.
So yeah, you're right. You can only do this if you're if you have an emissary here in Austin to bring us fried chicken.
I mean, call up an Uber or hopefully a company that doesn't suck. Fuck Uber, fuck Lyft here in Austin, Texas.
Yep.
But you know, call up some other company.
Yeah,
and have them send us some food.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's a good. That's actually a good way.
Okay.
That's better than my send us fried chicken in the mail.
I'm with you. I'm going to have to figure out what our official address is for our new office.
Yes.
And people can just send us shit.
Yes.
Like fried chicken.
Yes, fried chicken.
What the fuck? All right. Well, those are the ways you guys can help us out. Patreon.com/TV Dudes. Also want to give a quick shout out to Permanent Record.
Permanent Record.
This week, this month rather, all the other shows on Permanent Record Network are going to be pimping us, the TV Dudes. What? So we in turn want to just promote the Permanent Record Network itself. You can check it out at permanentrcrd.com.
Permanentrcrd.com.
And Permanent Record is a great network, a collection of all these different podcasts that we all got together because we all love talking about TV in different facets or something tangentially TV related. And we thought, you know what? We're going to band together, put a little network tag. We're going to help promote each other. And, you know, it's been going great.
Yeah.
We're getting a studio.
That's right.
So very cool. Go check them out. And thank you guys for the support. Listener question time, Randy.
All right. Let's do it.
You said you checked these out already.
I did. I got a little ahead of me.
So they've been vetted by the Randy Lander.
Yep.
They got to be good, right?
Sure.
If you guys like us on Facebook, you guys can ask us questions once a week, and we will look over them, and we'll scoff and turn our noses down on them and say, garbage, garbage.
That doesn't sound like
us. No, it doesn't. We generally read almost all of them.
We love our questions.
Yeah, we do. Our first question comes to us from Dennis McElwain, who says, hey, dudes, Review is one of the darkest shows masquerading as a bright and cheerful comedy. Can you think of any other shows that fit that description? It does not necessarily need to be a comedy.
So before I answer the question, Grant, you've never watched any Review, right?
I haven't.
You should watch it. It's all done now. Like, three seasons. The third season's really short. It is brilliant dark comedy. It's really good.
All right.
But the first thing I thought of when he was talking about this is not a comedy, but a show that sort of dark and moody. This a show that's sort of not what you would expect is Rectify. Sundance is Rectify. Because you hear the premise about a guy who supposedly raped and murdered his high school girlfriend and was sent to prison for life, and then he was sort of exonerated, and they're not sure whether he did it or not, but they set him free back in the world and he has to adjust. It sounds like dark as hell, you know, harrowing television.
Yeah.
And what's weird is Rectify can be, but what it is essentially, it's almost a sort of light and airy. It's about a guy sort of outside of time coming back and figuring out how to get into his life. And it's one of the most affirming visions of religion you've ever seen on television. It's very, very, very deep and nuanced. And it's not at all what I thought it was going to be. So if you like sort of expectations flipped on their head, Rectify is a good one.
There's a show called The Leftovers, which is the premise is, what if 2% of the world's population suddenly disappeared? Wouldn't that be fucking crazy? How do people deal with like this new supernatural world? But what you'd actually find out, that is, it's a great examination on irreconcilable grief and how it manifests itself in depression and anger.
And thanks, lion Johnny sex, Neal. And lion sex cults.
And lion sex cults. Yeah, like, wah, wah, wah. I also think about, like, Eastbound and Down, about how it's, like, the story of Kenny Powers, it seems like this. He's loud and bombastic, but underneath all of that is the most pathetic person that everyone else is like trying to accommodate in some weird way, even though he's such a fucking asshole. He's a terrible person, and it's really sad that he's like still clinging on immaturely to his past.
Oh my god, he's Trump.
Oh man, I would love to see Kenny Powers go into a debate against Trump.
No, sequel series. Who plays Kenny Powers? I can never remember his name.
Danny McBride.
Danny McBride comes back to play a completely cartoonish version of Donald Trump, Westbound and Down.
Westbound.
West Wing. Get it?
That's good. West Wing and Down. Yeah. Oh, man.
HBO, call me.
Benjamin Hamill says, I don't watch The Leftovers. I actually stopped watching sometime in season one because it was so goddamn depressing.
You know why it's depressing?
Why?
Because it's a, what is it called? What's Johnny's?
It's a great examination on irreconcilable grief and how it manifests itself in depression and anger.
That does sound depressing.
Fuck, it's so sad. It's such a fun show. But having said that, I do want to continue with it. I just need some strength. Anyway, I'm sure you guys are going to talk The Leftovers to death, but I just wanted to know how you would rank The Leftovers finale along some of the all-time great finales, like the ones from 6 months before The Shield. And this is a good question here. Or better yet, how does it rank against Lindelof's other series finale, the one for Lost?
That's a good question. Do you want to hit it now, or do you want to hit it when we do our Leftovers discussion?
We're already here.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I want to hear your take. Actually, I know what your take is.
Do you?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. What I want to know, I know you loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know the last part first. How does it compare to Lost finale?
Much better than Lost finale.
Really? Okay.
By far.
Interesting.
By far. I would say Lost is a... I love Lost more mm-hmm. as a show as a whole,
mm-hmm.
but, like, well, it's so weird to describe. Like, Lost is such an engrossing experience that rustles my jimmies in a good way. And Leftovers is... examining a deep and depressing but it's a lot more work, I think.
Okay.
And I mean how I'm just taking, am I just talking about the finale?
Yeah, just the finale.
Fine, that's a lot easier. The finale fully wraps up everything in such a beautiful package, and it answers anything that I needed answering.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Okay.
I love it. I think how I'd rank it among those top three. It's tough. I'm maybe just based on recency, I'd rank it number one.
Really?
Wow. I thought when I think of Six Feet Under, I can't remember the rest of the finale episode mm-hmm. except for the last 10 minutes.
Okay.
When I think of The Shield, I think of how powerful that final scene was. And I think that the rest of the episode was great in intensity.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel, it feels a little bit disconnected from the regular structure of the show. Because right. it's such a bottle episode or whatever of like right. of him just kind of confessing to everything, right?
Right.
A spoiler. and this felt like such a great end cap to everything that was set up rather than kind of a, I don't even know how to pronounce the word, denouement?
Denouement.
What do you think?
I, of course, did not love this as much as you did, because I don't know that I could have loved it as much as you did.
Fair.
I emotionally disconnected from The Leftovers a little bit in this season three. I thought it was a very strong episode, but emotionally speaking, Lost connected with me more, and I remember the moments of Lost a little bit more.
Mm.
And so I think that it does not rank above Lost for me. It definitely doesn't rank above The Shield, which I think may be the best final episode of a show on TV that I've seen. Like, I think The Shield finale might be better than The Terriers finale to me. Like, it is a great finale. I don't know if anybody's done a better finale of a show for me.
It's pretty fantastic. Like so I said, I mean, I feel like yeah. it's more I'm just in the moment.
Sure.
In the afterglow of Leftovers right now.
Yeah. So The Shield, nothing, I don't know that anything's going to surpass The Shield's finale for me, because that was such a great capper to a long-running film. It's better than the Breaking Bad finale. It's better than the Lost finale. It's one of those things for me. 6 Feet Under, I have never seen.
Oh.
I've only seen the first season, so I've never seen the end. I just know it's one of those great finales.
I cannot remember what the rest of the episode is, yeah. except for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So, fuck if I know.
Who winds up 6 feet under?
They all do.
Oh, twist ending.
Yeah. Ross Brown says, unless I'm mistaken, I believe you guys have said we're currently in the golden age of TV. I'm curious when you think this began and which shows kicked it off.
This is a really interesting question. People have written books about this.
Yes. And I would say that we're like in a silver age now.
Yeah.
I think we've passed what we were referring to as the golden age a little bit ago with the end of like Mad Men, Sopranos, Breaking Bad.
See, I was going to say the Sopranos is one that you point to as like, that's the start of sort of the golden age of TV that we've seen. But I think that the golden age of TV sort of peaked when it was Mad Men and Breaking Bad were both on at the same time,
mm-hmm.
and Game of Thrones was also on. I mean, there was we were at a point where like everything was great.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'd say it started. I mean, you could say Sopranos was the biggest one where it made the line, the delineation in, like, this is king shit.
Yeah.
But one could argue that Oz kind of opened the gates, or you could reach back to, like, Hill Street Blues as kind of kicking things off. I would say more Oz as far as, like, setting a standard that Sopranos was able to kind of piggyback off of and really kind of, I guess, take the torch and lead things.
I agree with you. I think that Oz is definitely something that without Oz, there's no Sopranos. But I don't know that Oz is basically the start of Golden Age TV. It's sort of the presaging of it. But I don't think it actually caused us to see. It wasn't until by the time the Sopranos was up and running, that's when other shows started happening too. Oz was sort of an isolated incident.
As far as like kicking it off, I don't know. Like, so Sopranos?
I'd say Sopranos probably.
Sopranos is the best bet.
But here's the thing. I could also make the argument that Breaking Bad. Because
Breaking Bad come first or Mad Men?
Mad Men came first.
Okay.
But I could argue for Breaking Bad because Breaking Bad is when all of a sudden we had more networks that were viable. So AMC, FX.
But Breaking Bad didn't like blow up right away.
No, but the level – basically Breaking Bad is a good bellwether because there was so much good TV on at that point. That's when we were truly in the golden age. It's not that there was one great show or two or three great shows. It's that there were so many great shows it was impossible to keep up with all of them.
I think that's a good argument.
If you look at that as the golden age. So there's no one answer to this, but I could argue with any of those shows. And – interestingly, I think that whether we're in the Silver Age or not, we're at peak TV right now.
Yeah.
So, which is something different. And it's I definitely don't think we've ended that age. I'm super happy with what's on my TV right now.
I just peeked ahead in some of the questions.
I know.
Zach McLernan says, so, since ABC and Fox seem to want to do live musicals, why not do a Batman one? Maybe something in the vein of holy musical Batman? Which, Randy, you need to watch. I feel like this would be the next level of Batman catharsis next to Lego Batman. Thoughts?
First of all, Zach, thank you for Holy Musical Batman. Never heard of this.
Yeah.
And it's in 5 parts on YouTube. And when I find some time, I'm definitely watching it. I watched the opening song and I'm like, okay, this is cheesy fun.
Grant,
you will hate it. You will hate it so much.
Yeah, no.
You played it so much.
Don't touch Batman with a live musical.
But
don't touch anything with a live musical.
Here's the problem.
Okay.
With the Batman live musical. Prince is dead. We've already had the Batman live musical, and it was the Batman 89, and it was fantastic.
So good. Was it good?
Yes.
I can't watch that scene without cringing.
I love that.
Every time I see it,
the Joker has like 3 musical numbers.
Jack Nicholson like dancing to Prince is just everything
amazing.
Wrong.
It's amazing.
Everything
is what it
wrong
is.
With the early 90s, late 80s just wrapped into one.
If you can somehow get Lin-Manuel Miranda to do a Batman musical, then maybe I'm in. But,
well, shit, yeah.
But Prince already did the perfect Batman musical. That said, if they got like a lineup of killer like funk and hip-hop musicians to do a Batman musical based on Batman 89 and Prince's music, then that Batman Live should definitely happen.
If it's all tongue-in-cheek and slightly satirical.
Yes,
yeah.
For real.
Hey, okay,
absolutely.
Kyle Volte says, hey, TV dudes, since the TV shows are in their summer lull, are there any shows you're going to try and catch up on?
We were just talking about this.
Yes.
Yeah. The Americans?
The Americans. We're both behind.
Was it? What show were we watching that made Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt that referenced it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was. It was like I was watching Kimmy Schmidt, and there's this line, and he's like, we're definitely at peak TV when you take a show like The Americans for granted. I'm like, holy shit, I really do. I haven't watched any of it.
Yeah. The Americans, we were just talking about we need to catch up on Handmaid's Tale, American Gods. I mean, I'm still like a couple episodes in, but
yeah.
I just kind of want to make sure I'm current.
I want to catch up. And then Casual starting up again, which I really enjoy.
Feud. I never got to finish that, and I know it's brilliant. And what's that other one on HBO? Big Little Lies.
Oh, yeah.
I heard such great things about that first season.
Me too.
I need to finish it.
I didn't like that first episode, but I heard it was really good, so... I need to go back on that. Yeah, there's a whole bunch. Plus, for me, I haven't finished all the CW shows. I wrapped up Supergirl, but I haven't wrapped up Flash and Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow. And yes, I know I understand, but this is me, and it's super.
Sorry,
hard
I rolled
TV.
My eyes so many times.
I mean, I it seems weird to me that I haven't caught up on all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I get it. More Ben. I'm sorry if I'm going to butcher your name here. More Ben Reuven says, "Hello, TV dudes. I have been visiting some older relatives this week, and I was wondering which old TV characters do you guys like, and most importantly, what type of old character would you want to age into?" I personally would want to be Mike Ehrmantraut when I grow up. Which old men, women, TV characters do you want to be when you grow up?
I love this question.
Which, like, I mean, Mike Ehrmantraut, what a crotchety, angry old dude.
But of course you want to grow up to be Mike Ehrmantraut. He's an utter badass.
He can do everything.
Yeah.
You know who mine is?
Who?
Lady Elena. From Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't thought about it.
She's so sassy and hilarious. She just doesn't give a fuck.
See, I had a couple answers. Ehrmantraut, you want to grow up into sort of a badass like Mike Ehrmantraut. But there's a part of me that, like, I want to grow up to be like a goofy sitcom old guy, like Coach on Cheers or Elliot Gould on Friends.
Or Coach from Coach?
Or no, I don't want to grow up to be that guy.
You don't want to be him?
No, I don't want to be the guy.
Jerry Van Dyke, his buddy.
Oh, also Art from Justified.
Oh, okay.
Sort of the crotchety old badass.
Because you like his political views.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, not the actor, the character.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I love this question, though, because, of course, we all want to be the Golden Girls.
Right? Oh, yeah.
All
which Golden Girl?
Any of them. They're all awesome.
Yeah, but you got to pick one.
Well, Blanche is the slutty one.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, that'd be me. I want to grow up to be a slutty old woman.
I feel like I'd more accurately be Rose, but I want to be Sophia.
Sophia's the badass. She's the best one. Yeah.
She's also a Lady Elena. She can give a fuck.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Last question comes to us from Mike S. Chung.
Love this question, too.
Who asks, what do I have to do to get into Grant Davis's pants?
So, I think I have an answer on this one.
Do you?
You're what, like a 30 waist, maybe?
Yeah.
So, all you got to do is slim down to 30 and sneak into his house, you can get to his pants.
Oh, that's very
that's
generous.
What the question means,
30
right?
waist, wow.
I don't know.
That'd be itty-bitty waist.
And a round thing in your face. But that was what the question meant, right? How could he get into your pants?
Yeah, I feel like it was literally my pants and my junk in it.
How can I wear Grant's pants?
Gotcha. You become a patron. I'll just send you a pair of pants. Grant Davis's pants. I'll sign them.
You're gonna do the follow-ups, right? There were two follow-ups that I thought were fantastic.
Nick Thies says, I'm heading down to Austin next week. I'm making it my mission to find out. Oh, no.
Oh, that's... Nick, I don't know about that meeting now.
We were going to see him at some point.
Were.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's a little weird now. And Zach McLernan says, Nick, start by saying something about the leftovers and see where it takes you.
I feel like Zach's got the right answer.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Buy me a drink. Talk about the leftovers. Oh, boy.
By the way, I don't want people to interpret this as thinking that I want this question because I'm so happy they picked you. What, nobody wants to get into my pants? Is that what I'm hearing?
Mike doesn't. He wants my pants, apparently.
I feel like I'm begging for trouble by even making that joke, by the way. No one asked that question next week.
Someone wants into your magic asshole tour. Randy, you remember that show, Growing Pains?
I do.
So, Mike Seaver, was that the young kid, Kirk Cameron's character? He had a friend, best friend named Boner. I believe that was his nickname, Boner.
Seemed kind of racy.
Yeah. I guess because he always pulled boners, you know, like mistakes back then.
Yes. I guess we were between the 80s and the 90s, we were sort of transitioning into a time when Boner meant something very different.
Yes. Because I also recall in that show... Like, Boner made a joke about how, not a joke, I guess, but to the audience it was, that his mom would always write his name on his underwear so he would know which pair of underwear was his. And so his mom was writing boner in all of his underwear.
Is it possible that wasn't his nickname and his mom just put boner on his gift, on his like birth certificate?
I don't know what's going on with this.
It's a little weird.
But anyway.
So we want to talk about the news?
Boners.
Yeah, boners.
Let's talk about the news.
All right. So Cowboy Bebop is getting a live action TV series, and many of my Facebook friends are distraught.
Are they? I saw some people excited and other people angry, especially based on all the whitewashing that's going on with all the other shows.
Yeah, I think that's the whitewashing is the big fear. Oh, well, this is interesting. It's being the Midnight Radio is doing it. Consists of writers Scott Rosenberg, Josh Applebaum, Andre Namek, the three people who made October Road, which is another show that's going to be ATX Fest. I'm interviewing two of those guys this week.
Ah, looks
so
like you got something
to ask
them
about some Cowboy Bebop.
Nice.
And
did you ever watch Cowboy Bebop?
Yes, I've watched, I think, most of it.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
Here's interesting. I'm not sure. It says it's being executive produced by those guys. It's being showrun and written by Thor Ragnarok screenwriter and comics writer Christopher Yost.
Oh, okay.
Also, Jeff Pinkner from Lost involved. So this is, it's a good group of people. And for those who don't know, Cowboy Bebop is set in the year 2071 AD. There's a Bebop is a group of bounty hunters and sort of they're called cowboys on the spaceship Bebop. And they're sort of renegade bounty hunters who get involved in various adventures.
Serenity. Gotcha.
It's got a great jazz soundtrack, which I hope they keep. And I guess they are going to do a thing where it's like it's more American, like deliberately American, not like whitewashed, but like. It's going to be a sort of a different take, it sounds like. We don't really know. I hope that they actually cast some people who are not white. I think that'd be a good thing. But the thing is, I think people are reacting to this because of Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
And it's if this was a movie, I might have the same issue. But as a TV show, I'm curious, especially with those people behind it. I understand the trepidation. I do, especially because Bebop doesn't need a remake. It's really well done as it is, but it's a good premise.
You know, the whitewashing thing.
Yeah.
It's always weird. Like, where does the blame fall ultimately? I don't know who's always behind the scenes pulling the strings and saying, we will fund you if you get such and such person and it has to be this white person or whatever, or I don't know what they say. And like, it sucks the system that's doing it. But I'm like, I always wonder, like, is that the right person who should be blamed, or were they forced in this position or else like this wasn't getting made?
Well, you remember the movie Soul Brother, right?
Yeah.
In which it was like an evil white conspiracy behind everything.
Always them.
Them. Those guys.
It's just called The Man, I believe.
The Man.
The Man organization.
The Man is the one responsible for it.
It was a good movie.
Cinemax is doing a Bruce Lee-inspired Warrior from Justin Lin and the co-creator of Banshee.
All right.
It's inspired by an idea from Bruce Lee himself. So it's a 19th century crime drama set in San Francisco Chinatown during the Tong Wars. Follows the story of Ah Sam, a martial arts prodigy and Chinese immigrant who becomes a hatchet man for one of Chinatown's most powerful crime families. He will be played by Josh Hartnett. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. Let's go with the whitewashing thing. This is going to be sort of organized crime in San Francisco during in Chinatown. Sounds interesting. I don't know if people
in the
have
1800s.
Watched. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if people have seen Banshee, but Banshee's great and has some great like crime and action and that kind of thing. This is a guy who can do this. And Justin Lin, of course, did four of the Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah,
that's a good pedigree. I'm kind of excited about this.
Yeah, that's enough that I'm like, all right, definitely going to check this out.
Here's an interesting thing. It's filming in Cape Town, South Africa sometime this fall. Do we know anybody in Cape Town?
Kyle, if you're listening to this.
You're going to have to stay there and report on this.
Yeah, they're probably doing some pre-production right now. Figure out what's going on.
Yep. Just go ask some questions.
Go shake some hands and
No American tourist has ever gotten in trouble just asking questions around randomly around South Africa.
Yeah, you're going to be fine.
I'm sure you'll be fine.
Kyle's a dead man.
Snowpiercer, another movie coming to TV, has cast possibly its lead, Jennifer Connelly.
Okay,
or maybe
awesome.
Not its lead. She's one of the first class passenger.
Oh,
Scott,
okay.
Scott Derrickson. Hey, we know that guy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He is adapting Snowpiercer for a show. And he is directing and co-producing the hour-long pilot. David Diggs is attached to star as the prisoner at the tail end of the train. So Jennifer Connelly, David Diggs, I'm interested.
This is very cool. Yeah. You saw the movie, right?
Yeah.
Dude, it was so intense.
Yeah.
I love the directing in that movie. It was so fun.
Yeah, I'm super excited about this. This is, I mean, I'm excited to see what they do with it.
Yeah.
Another one causes consternation amongst my Facebook feed. Misfits US reboot finds its leads, pilot ordered by Freeform.
I was kind of excited about this until it's Freeform, which is ABC Family. You're not fooling me.
Nope.
ABC Family does not do Misfits.
Yeah, Misfits was a sex and violence and bad language superhero story.
Sex, drugs, rock and roll, just foul mouth pieces of shit that get superpowers.
Yep.
And lazy pieces of shit.
Yep. I've only seen a couple episodes. I never finished watching it, but it's on Hulu, I think, still.
Yeah.
But watch the original. It's great. So the interesting thing is Josh Schwartz and Diane Ruggiero Wright, who Josh Schwartz was involved with Chuck and the OC. Diane Ruggiero Wright was involved with Veronica Mars, as well as iZombie. These are good people.
Yeah.
They've cast Ashley Lathrop from Sirens, Trey Hall from Rebel, Jake Cannavale. Is he related to Bobby
Cannavale?
It's
his son.
Okay, I'm Nurse Jackie.
And he looks just like him, like a younger version of him.
Okay, okay. And Ally McDonald from Orphan Black.
I'm kind of interested in Cannavale Jr. or whatever his name is.
Yeah. It's a good creative team. But yeah, Freeform? I don't know, man.
That's where I get a hang up there. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, not all of this is going to come to fruition, of course, but there's a lot of interesting stuff in the pipeline, which is nice because we're starting to hit the end of some good stuff.
Yeah.
Finally, for those who like animation stuff, Disney XD has released a Ant-Man short, and they're going to do a series of these.
Dude, did you get a chance to check this out?
I have not yet, just watched
it. Okay, the animation on this is gorgeous.
Nice.
It's so stylized. This has got to be Mike Allred, I think.
Really? Okay.
I'm not sure. Does it say Mike Allred? It looks just like his kind of color palette.
Okay.
And like the nice, simple, stylized look. And then it's funny. Like the first little clip, it's about a minute and a half. And it takes place with him at his daughter's science school fair.
Okay.
And he goes to help out her volcano that's messed up by, like, secretly transforming into Ant-Man. And then gets in a fight with a Yellow Jacket who's there to terrorize him. And they're just kind of, like, talking trash to each other while he's, like, running away. It's really funny.
So,
you guys got to check this out.
Paul Rudd does not do the voice, right? I assume.
No, I believe Paul Rudd imitator. Is. Does it say on here?
I don't know. Well, you know, here's the thing. I'm curious. I haven't watched it yet. Whenever someone tries to do their Tony Stark impression, their Robert Downey Jr., that always wound up saying like sound like Jack Black. So I'm curious to hear what a Paul Rudd impression sounds like and who it sounds more like.
Yeah, it didn't sound like Paul Rudd, and I'm looking at this and trying to figure out who the names of the voices are, but I don't see it. Here. It's really cool, though, and you guys need to check this out as soon as you can.
I'm definitely going to give it a look.
Looks great. So it's been a little bit since we've checked in on Fargo, and I believe we left off with like episode 3 or 4 where
the law of non-contradiction, where it's all the story of Thaddeus Mobley.
Yeah, her name's not Nora. What's her name on
her
here?
Her name is not Nora.
Carrie Coon.
Her name is, oh man, I don't have it in front of me. It's not Nikki Swango, although that'd be awesome.
It's
Gloria Burgle.
Burgle!
Police Chief Gloria Burgle.
Yeah, where Gloria Burgle is out in L.A. So we haven't checked in since then, and I got to binge through the last couple episodes.
So last we talked about it, you weren't feeling it.
Well, I do think that Fargo is one of those shows I need to watch in batch installments.
Okay.
It is a binge show for me, mm-hmm. oddly enough, because when I watch like just one episode, I get a little antsy, but when I'm able to just like digest a bunch of them at a time, mm-hmm. I kind of become increasingly engaged. And okay. That seems to work for me.
I love Fargo. I love this show. And these last four have been really, really good. I can't place my favorite story because I really, really like, I love, Carrie Coon. I think she's great here.
I love how everything in the plot starts tightening up a lot more.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it starts getting a lot stronger because it felt like there's a bunch of like, disparate storylines happening like mm-hmm. for the first few episodes, and that also made it kind of hard to want to like glom on to what's going on and like figure it out.
Yeah,
but now that they're all converging and Gloria is like pointing out, look, this is connected to this and this, yep. and like the red tape she's running into, and then all of the like basically the trouble between the brothers. Ewan yep. McGregor is fantastic in this.
The overarching story of the Fargo shows seems mm-hmm. to be an underestimated female law enforcement officer who sort of is the only one who sees what's going on. Because that was definitely the case with one, definitely the case with this season, and I feel like it was two as well.
Well, two was the dad.
It was the dad, that's right, yeah. But that's a good thing to take away from Fargo as sort of a central theme. And I think Carrie Coon plays that great. But for me, the one who runs away with the show is Nikki Swango.
Oh.
The best name ever, by the way, Nikki Swango.
Yeah.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Because I think she plays this sort of smart in a lot of ways and dumb in others. This sort of smart but not so smart. She can get away with all the crimes that she wants to.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, you can see how this person got caught, and you can also see how she sort of wrapped this parole guy around her finger. Except that it's not that. Like like we were all waiting for the other shoe to drop, and when she's interviewed by Shea Whigham's dumbass sheriff, he goes right to that. He's like, you know, you obviously were using this guy. And that was not the case. There was legit love there. Like, she loves him.
I mean, I don't know. Like, we never fully get... Like, I love the scene where he proposes to her, mm-hmm. and she's like, I'm in my wig. Like, what are you doing? And then she takes her wig off, and she's like, do it again. Because, like, she is, like, fully invested, it seems. But is... I mean, she kills for him.
Yeah.
And so there's got to be that love there.
There is no doubt in my mind that it's sincere, that he's sincere, that she sincerely loves him and he sincerely loves her.
Yeah.
And that is an interesting relationship because they're both so tragic and doomed.
So she's your favorite character in this?
Yes, she's my favorite character.
Because I am loving David Thewlis. The more and more he gets to do stuff, he is a person that... The character is written fascinatingly.
Yes.
And he is embracing it. David Thewlis, like, hey, if you guys are tuning into our Patreon, he pops up in Wonder Woman
as well. Yeah, we'll talk about Wonder Woman,
But, he is so riveting here. And the more and more, and, like, he is a wolf. Yeah. I love how they describe him as a wolf, and he just is.
Yeah. By the way, the Peter and the Wolf episode where they used the Peter and Wolf music, that was so good.
Beautiful. I mean... Like, Holly loves gimmicks.
Yeah.
And he uses them to such great effect that I love them too.
Yep.
I'm a sucker for most gimmicks, and especially with how he employs it. It's so brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say that he's... Like, who's your favorite of each season? Like, Mike is my favorite of season two.
Who's your favorite of season two?
Mike. What's the actor's name? The black guy with the fro.
Oh, yeah. Mike, I forget his name. I forget the last name. But yes, that's the best character.
Yeah.
The sort of erudite hitman.
Yeah.
And he's great. And the first season, I don't know.
Martin Freeman was pretty great.
Martin Freeman was great, but also so was Colin Hanks's character.
Yeah. Allison Tallman.
Oh, Allison Tallman,
by far the best.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny is, like, watching this season, I keep seeing, like, I'm like, when I compare Carrie Coon and her performance in The Leftovers to this, I'm just like, are you guys not giving her enough to do?
That's a reason. I actually was thinking this when I was watching it, because I watched them sort of back to back this week. And Carrie Coon is playing a less layered character here.
Yeah.
She still brings plenty to the role, but yeah, she's not being given. But I think that's...
But I think she's having to, like work to bring a lot more to a role that's basically, like, she's just kind of, like, running lines, it feels like.
I don't know. I don't give her a lot. I feel like it's unfair to compare any character. Nora Durst is one of those characters that use a character of a lifetime for her.
Yeah, and then, like, when she went to L.A., that was her kind of getting to step out and shine a bit. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I like when I get to see her interact and, like, have conversations with people, but it seems like she's just kind of, she's driving the plot a lot more than she actually gets to be a fully invested character.
That's fair. I can see that. I love the Ewan McGregor playing the two brothers.
Yeah,
because you forget it's the same actor. Like it is it's an Orphan Black level performance. Like he's.
Are we going to spoiler territory?
I think we're good to spoil a little bit. Yeah,
if you guys want to jump ahead a few minutes, we're going to spoil a little bit. All right, you jumped ahead.
Yes,
the scene where he kills Emmett kills him accidentally.
Yeah.
But then just, like, fully embraces the dark side there?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, and his mustache buddy, Sai?
Yes.
He's so hilarious with his mustache and his mannerisms, reactions to everything.
Yeah.
He seems like a good-hearted guy who tries to be a tough guy badass, but he can't really be. He's in over his head in this world. Well,
he's so... It seems like he's almost ready to faint every time anything happens.
Yeah.
But
I love when he steps up and his bullies his brother and flicks him off and hits his car.
When Emmett is talking to the cop and clearly giving away too much.
Yeah.
And just the reaction that his mustache buddy has, like trying to get talk to our lawyer, let's go. He's like,
we gotta leave.
Please stop talking. Which right before that, they were talking to Mary McDonnell, who is Mary McDonnell? Yeah, Mary McDonnell, who's great as the older woman who's like trying to buy their company.
How's she like? She still looks the same young.
She's amazing. But
she's a vampire.
The same thing where she has that sort of bemused smile as Emmett tells her all these things you should really not be telling her.
And he's wiping blood off his shirt and everything.
Yeah.
It's like, you're such a mess. I love everything he said to that cop.
This is another, Fargo always has great expanded casts.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's always some character that pops out at the end that's like, oh, this character's been there the whole time, but this is they're going to get their featured moment.
So. Which, by the way, in this last episode, that was a great little nod to season one when we see not Mr. Numbers, the other dude, Mr.
I know what you're talking about.
Mr. Numbers is the one who dies.
Yes.
Adam Goldberg, or whatever his name is.
Yes. And Mr. Wrench.
Mr. Wrench.
Yeah.
Mr. Wrench pops up.
Yeah.
That's who she's sitting next to. And I stared at her for a while. I'm like, who is that? And I had to go look it up. I was like, oh, it's Mr. Wrench.
I was waiting for some kind of reveal that they were going to involve.
He's the deaf guy, right?
Yeah.
He was the deaf one who's like he's the muscle.
Yeah. Yeah.
The wrench.
Yep.
Yeah, so interesting to see him next to her. I wonder if... I assume that has to play out somehow, right?
I do, too. Yeah. I don't think that was just a nod.
You don't think Swain goes, like, immediately dead in that next scene?
No, there's no way.
Think they're going to at least kidnap her?
I think at the very least, yeah.
Okay.
Or Wrench is going to save her, and the two of them will go on the run. Who knows?
They could be tied together, handcuffed.
Yep.
It could be just like Bulletproof with Adam Sandler and Damon Wayans.
No, it can't be like that.
Just like that. Nothing like that. It was such a good movie.
Oh, my God.
All right, let's jump over to talking about Better Call Saul.
Yeah. So Better Call Saul, I think we last talked about it was the big court scene with Chuck and those guys. And since then, watching Jimmy sort of descend, like he's at the bottom. We know where he's going to go.
Well, yeah, Jimmy is hustling, like he's really trying to play as straight an arrow as he is capable of doing, which is still, he's still trying to, swindle people.
He's still a hustler.
Yeah, but not so bad. He's trying to upsell his commercial space at time so that he can make enough money to pay his rent. Because he already invested in a bunch and he doesn't know what else to do as a job.
You know what's interesting here, though, I think it's deliberate, is that Jimmy... Chuck wants Jimmy to go straight and live this straight life and become this whatever he wants him to be. Not a lawyer, but he wants him to be legit, his legit younger brother that he can look down on.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck is the one who's driven him to this. Like, Jimmy had a perfectly decent law firm. If Chuck had been able to let it go that Kim got the whatever the company is, I'm blanking on the name. If they'd been able to, he'd been able to let go of the Mount Verde thing, if he'd just been able to let go of this one little sting on his pride, and still he has a law firm where he's a partner, like his life is great.
And I mean, it's a pretty big stain on his pride.
But
for a guy who's already like lost a lot and in denial about his issue.
Yeah. But if he'd been able to let that go and not drag Jimmy into court and push him to this point, I don't think Saul happens. I think he pushed him into being Saul, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a certain degree of personal accountability that, I mean...
There is, I don't think it would have happened without Chuck making things worse.
Sure, but, you know, just like a rainstorm could cause a hurricane down the road, whatever. I mean, I think there's a lot of factors that kind of lead to where he is, but... He's making these bad decisions that his conscience knows, because you see him struggle with it.
Yeah, sure.
But he's going to slip and trip and get a free guitar out of hustling guys.
You know what, though?
Who were assholes.
That's exactly right. They pushed him to it, too. Jimmy doesn't go to this point. Right now, the difference between Jimmy and Saul goes right to it. Yeah. And slipping Jimmy used to go right to it. Jimmy the lawyer... tries really hard not to use these skills he can fall back on. He doesn't go to his con man side. He's a little slick. He'll do the whole sales pitch thing. Mm-hmm. But pretending to slip on a drumstick and all that kind of thing. He did that because they'd screwed him. They'd screwed him out of the. He made a deal with them. They made a commercial.
Those guys were comically dickish too.
Yeah, but that's the Sklar brothers.
Yeah,
they're awesome.
Yeah, they're pretty funny.
Yeah,
but I was just like. You know, he came in there, like, under good terms, like, they had agreed to it. He to a point where he was already there setting up. Like, they called in and said yes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, for them to backpedal after he's already there and just kind of waste his time, and then he gives them a free commercial, and it's obviously driving business.
Yeah.
And then they still try to fuck him over because they're going to get a better deal elsewhere.
Yeah.
I'm like... Fuck you guys.
You know what, though?
You're not innocent in this either.
In their defense, though, I will say, like, they called the station and found out that Jimmy was not related at all, that he was basically upcharging them, that they could get the same thing. Like I think that they were getting taken.
And all that.
Yeah, but they were getting taken, and they caught on to it.
Yeah, that's fair, but...
But then they pushed it too far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean... This is what the show does. It makes us kind of defend a person who's scamming and swindling people.
Yep.
You know, we can see his personal story and feel bad for him, but he's also fucking over other people.
There's also a little bit of that pride thing where he keeps insisting on paying for the law firm, even though he doesn't have the money.
Yeah.
Kim comes to him. It's such a Heisenberg moment because Kim comes to him and says, look, I can float us for a little while you get back on your feet.
Yeah.
And he says, no. And Kim also has her own pride moment where she gives like $14,000 to Howard because she wants him to feel like she's off the hook.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to let her off the hook.
I love that scene,
Howard's still an asshole too, by the way. I think Howard's always been kind of an asshole.
They're all assholes. Yeah. We're choosing our asshole among the assholes here.
But the other interesting story is what's going on with Nacho and Hector.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole story of the cartel – I always feel like that was a story I wanted to see more of. Like, for all that, I'm loving Better Call Saul, but there was really no part of me that left Breaking Bad thinking, yeah, but how did Saul become a lawyer? Like, but how does Gus wind up on the outs of the cartel, all that kind of stuff? Like, I still want to know what Gus's Peruvian connection is. Like, isn't it Peru or something like these? Like, maybe the implication is that he's connected somehow.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he's the son of someone powerful. I don't know if they're going to give us that, and I really want that information.
I think the scene with Nacho and the pills when he's transferring it into the pocket, how they filmed that was some of the most tense work I've seen this year in an episode.
Yeah, it was really good.
I was so glued to my seat just watching that. It was amazing.
So let me ask you this.
Yes.
The air conditioning. Did he do that just to cover when he was going to be sweating?
Yeah.
Okay.
He goes up and cuts it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he cuts the AC so that it'll be hot, so he'll take off his jacket.
Oh, duh. That makes perfect sense.
He wanted it hot in there so that he'd take off the jacket so he could reach back. Yeah. So he waits until the jacket gets taken off.
I thought it was maybe that he did that so that when he was sweating and trying to pull this off, it wouldn't think. Yeah, but that makes sense. The jacket makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that'd be pretty slick, too.
I'm trying to think what else has been going on. I mean, Mike has been kind of on the out. Like, we haven't seen a lot of Mike in the last few episodes.
No, it seems like they're trying to do a little bit of a romantic relationship between him and that woman working on the sidewalk with him.
Yeah, I feel like he's a little forced.
Yeah, and I don't care. I mean,
it's fine. I like Mike. That's good for him. But yeah, I'm not.
It's like when Locke and what's her name? Kathy Seagal Lost. And I was like, I don't really care about this.
You know what's interesting, though, is the little people we've seen, like Crazy 8 made an appearance.
Katie Seagal, by the way.
Katie Seagal, yes. Crazy 8 makes an appearance. Goodman is, he was the guy that that Nacho had to beat up in episode 6.
Oh, that's who he is. And he pops up again in 8.
Yep. And Saul Goodman, of course, has made his first appearance.
Yes.
And also that we saw the super lab. We saw them scouting the location for the super lab, which is interesting because the implication when you watch Breaking Bad is that the super lab was built for Heisenberg.
Yeah.
But in fact, he had been building it already.
And then
happened upon a chemist who could really utilize it.
Yeah. I mean, brilliant. This show, I understand if other people aren't as excited about it because it's a slower paced and I want to say a little bit more thoughtful than action packed, I guess.
Yeah.
Show, and it kind of focuses on like more like white collar office work than it does the seedy underbelly.
Yeah, and
in a lot of
it's slow stuff. And deliberately paced, and there is the prequel problem if we know everybody goes for the most part.
Yeah,
but I love it. I love this show.
You know, taking a character, it's such character development. This is the work that I love that Vince Gilligan is able to take someone and mold them into someone else slowly and realistically over time, just like you watch Lindelof, how he can take and shape all his characters in Lost or Leftovers.
Yep.
Like, that's the impressive work to me, and I love it.
This show is 10 times better than it has any right to be, and I think that's a testament to all the people involved, who most of them are from Breaking Bad. The editors, the writers, the directors, it's a lot of people from Breaking Bad, and you can see the quality that went in. That was not a fluke.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about The Leftovers here.
All right, I liked it. Move on.
Yeah, that's it. All right, we're wrapped. I gotta say, man, this final episode was powerful. I was talking a couple weeks back about how, you know, the season one finale, the season two finale, they had some bleakness happen. You know, there was the riots with the GR and everything was like the town of Mapleton was kind of being torn apart in season one. Mm-hmm. And then they're left with the baby and they kind of reunite and they find something to kind of hold on to and love and stay together.
Yeah.
Nora and Kevin.
Yep.
And then in season two, you know, the town is once again in chaos. There's riots and Miracle.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, return once again of the GR, but like the return of the girls who had committed suicides or whatever. Yep. And it's just like all of it was fucked up, but he is reunited with his family. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I like that this episode, I love that this episode focused on their relationship, and it ultimately was a love story, and how they tell that is so brilliant in this that, you know, it goes sci-fi. It kind of steers into like crazy hard sci-fi for a little bit with the containment unit, the ladder, mm-hmm. the LADR yep. that Nora goes into. And then it leaves things open-ended and open to interpretation like the entire show has been.
Yeah.
That allows the viewer to question whether or not Nora's telling the truth, whether or not she went through the machine. And you can take it as a skeptic, as a believer, and ultimately it doesn't matter. You don't need the answer
right.
for the completion of a beautiful story there, but it's just kind of something fun to add into it. And I think whereas there's dangling threads with Lost that a lot of people were upset by and they needed a little bit more of a concrete answer, this fit thematically into everything they have always constructed in this show.
Yeah.
And that they've reinforced with Let the Mystery Be, but a lot of people just take it as they need because it is about... It's such a show that connects you personally and allows you to kind of analyze what you think about it.
It's a show about loss, depression...
grief and irreconcilable. Yeah.
I watched this... when they made the jump from Nora to older Sarah, I was... Not frustrated exactly, but I was a little impatient. Like, I wanted to know what the deal was, and we didn't get the reveal until the very end of the episode. So I'm like, I was trying to wonder, like, is this what she saw when she, like, did she jump into the future? Is this a, it didn't work and she's there? Like, I wanted to know the story. I wanted to know what happened.
Yeah.
And making me wait till the end of the episode to find out what happened drove me a little crazy.
Oh.
But I was so engaged in what was going on because, yeah, honestly, Carrie Coon. If you have Carrie Coon, you can get away with a lot. And her performance here was really good. And Justin Theroux was not a guy I knew that much before, but that guy has some depth.
Holy shit, I mean, does he?
He brought such a sense of loss and frustration and sort of childlike wonder at having found his sweetheart again. Like, I started to believe, I'm like, did something happen to Kevin? Does he literally not remember
her? Is this
her?
The alternate universe where, like, they don't have that shared history?
Yeah.
Or is something else weird? And then the reveal that Lori Garvey is alive?
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I think, like, that was the other note I was talking about. I'm like, you know, if she dies, you know, no matter, like, they can end everything else on, like, a positive note, but that was just really bleak, and you can't kind of walk that back. And then they do. They walk it back because she doesn't die.
Yeah.
She just ends up, you know, getting that reassuring call from her kids right before she scuba dives.
Yeah.
She scuba dives, she must come up. And I'm like, what? It's that George R. R. Martin rule, man. If you don't see them actually die on screen, they're not dead.
Yeah.
And in George R. R. Martin's case, sometimes they're still not dead.
Yeah. I thought that was... The thing that really intrigued me, and this is the same, the one complaint I have about The Leftovers, and it's not really a complaint so much as a, I wish this had caught on more, we might have seen this kind of stuff. You know, I want a whole show set in the world of International Assassin and all its crazy penis scanner things.
Yeah.
I also want a whole show of what the 98% world looks like.
Right.
Like,
did you read the article, the interview?
No.
Sepinwald did an interview with Damon Lindelof.
Okay.
And he was talking about this idea, and Lindelof said, hey, you know what? If our numbers magically double and we get amazing ratings on this, I'll come back and do another whole season that is Nora in the 98% world with, what's his name? Perfect Strangers guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mark Lynn Baker.
Yeah.
Just them traveling around the 98%.
That's what I wanted to see. That I'm sure he was joking. I want to see that world because it's a cataclysm of a different level.
Oh, yeah.
And talking about, like, you know, we don't have enough pilots to pilot planes, but all the technology's still there. Like, basically, the world sort of split.
How do things still run?
Yeah, that's... I don't need to know
how. You must pick up people and kind of move them like to cities again where they can just like let other stuff fall to ruin and be like, these are the cities we're going to kind of focus on.
Well, it reminds me of Why the Last Man.
Yeah.
Sort of a apocalyptic, it's not entirely apocalyptic. I like that idea. But what I think is interesting is one of the big complaints about Lost was always that it didn't answer all the questions.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about The Leftovers is, the only question left is why the 98% and the 2% split into different worlds. But that's sort of a metaphysical question. That doesn't matter. That's not a question we need an answer to. But the question of what happened, why did 2% of the people disappear, where did they go, we know the answer to that now. Or we don't if you choose not to believe Nora. But I like that they answered the question. They give an answer, and I thought that was really good.
It's I've been reading a bunch of different articles about this after the fact. There is a fantastic breakdown of this episode. Vulture does this long article that everyone should go read, especially if you've seen this show. But it goes and tackles how they developed this whole process for this final episode from the script perspective to the directing perspective to the editing process. Mm-hmm. And it goes really in depth. It has a bunch of little great pull out interactive stuff that it really is an enriched learning experience about like how they made all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating because you also read like where people disagreed a lot. Like everyone in the writer's room absolutely has an opinion.
Huh.
Or they know whether or not what Nora said was true.
Right.
But they're never going to tell you. That's what they said.
Right.
Like they're all going to take that to their grave, but they know for a fact whether or not that was true.
Right.
Tom Parada never wanted there to be any sort of explanation of the 2%.
Yeah.
And Lindelof is like, I can't just not give people nothing. I can't give people nothing. I burned on a cross for Lost because people needed something to kind of hold on to. And so, you know, ultimately it's a compromise between the two in that they're still able to leave it somewhat ambiguous, but they're able to give an answer. And I guess this brings us to the part that we don't actually have to discuss, but I think we should.
Yeah.
Because I think it's fun. What do you think? Did she tell the truth or not?
Oh, yeah. I think she told the truth.
You do?
Yeah.
I don't.
Interesting.
I think it fits narratively that she didn't. I think that she lied.
You think basically they opened up the pod, nothing happened, and she went to live on her own in Australia embarrassed?
I think that she needed to tell a lie that allowed her to deal with her grief.
Okay.
And she came up with one. But she wasn't able to tell her lie to Kevin until he told her the truth about him that she could kind of unburden herself and say, I've come to a place where this is what happened. I imagined, but now I've basically decided that I thought it was real, that I've gone over to this other land and come back from it. I don't know. There's just a lot of weirdness with the whole idea. She has to go over there. She has to find this guy who built that contraption. Why doesn't that guy send anyone back? Why is there no like back and forth? Like the whole idea that there's this other world that is receiving people periodically.
Right.
And they would have to know about that. Mark Lynn Baker shows back up in the world of the 2%. That would have to make some sort of news, right? Like they would know that the 98% world exists. Why would they like make an effort to get back there? Like, how does this guy get all of the resources in order to build another version of that LADR machine in order to send her back?
Right.
Granted, 10 years have passed. I guess who knows how long she's over there. But, I feel like when she's talking to the nun, and the nun is kind of telling her the lie about, like, that the priest wasn't up there or whatever, like, or that dude wasn't up there banging her.
Yeah.
that she's like, it's a nicer story.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need the nicer story. And I think that's what Nora was giving, is the nicer story that wraps things up and gives some sort of closure that she needs that a lot of the viewers need.
That makes sense. I am one of those viewers. I need that. My version of Leftovers is one in which when Kevin Garvey dies, he goes to this crazy world where he's an international assassin, where there's a reason. I like the neat little bow that ties up the 98%, 2% split. I like the explanation for everything.
It's so funny because we're both skeptics, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say that I might still hold on to a certain degree of – I don't actually know this. Maybe I'm talking out of my ass here. I might hold on to a certain degree of spirituality more so than you.
Yes, you do.
And so the fact that I come across with this at a much more skeptical rate, and that's my level of enjoyment with it, and you come across in a much more believer in the fantasy of it.
In fiction, I am always the believer guy. In fiction, I'm the believer. In reality, not as much. But in fiction, I tend to lean that way. Yeah, you're not wrong. It's an interesting dichotomy. But yeah, when it comes to the fiction, I always like the grander, weirder stuff.
The most powerful scene in this episode for me, it wasn't actually that end scene with her telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That dance that they do at the wedding.
Yeah.
When it does that close up of them just crying together.
Yeah.
And it just like holds on it.
Yeah.
It is so powerful. That is such a beautiful shot. And you know, I had feelings.
What?
I didn't cry.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong.
Fair.
But I was like, I feel this. This is a really powerful scene. I get it here.
Yeah.
And there's so much unsaid, but set on their faces. In that I'm like, the acting here.
Yeah.
How do they do that?
Yeah, like, they were both fantastic.
How do you, like, they're both, like, well, he's lying to her. She's trying to get him to, like, admit to it, but then it's all admitted on his face as he starts crying because he's dancing with her and mm-hmm. she's dancing with him. And, yeah. like, the weight of that, we as viewers, like, 3 years of these characters, yeah. just, like, fully understand there.
Yeah. By the way, the age makeup here was fantastic.
Yeah, it was really good.
It's really good.
I think he looked better than her.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I was like, man, her hair is so... So yeah. old and ratty.
Well, I think
how many years is this?
She'd been having a harder time though. She'd been living out in the outback. You know, she hadn't really taken.
She's been
care
living
of
in the 98% world. Yeah, man.
Oh, that's true. That's actually true too. Yeah,
that's yeah. a lot of stress on.
There's
a person.
Probably not a lot of shampoo over the 98%. Well, actually, I guess there would be a lot of shampoo.
A
left.
A lot of rotten shampoo
because there's shampoo made for. There's like 2% more shampoo left.
Yeah,
actually, there's 98% more shampoo left.
The idea, though, that she'd go over to this other world, like she's the most unlucky person.
Yeah,
in the 2% world.
Yeah,
because she lost 3 people in her family.
Yeah,
like she lost her whole family.
Mm-hmm.
But that in the flip perspective of that is, if they exist in that other world, yeah. they're the luckiest people on that
yeah,
planet.
They have their family. Yeah,
because in a world like she said, in a world full of orphans, they still had each other.
Yeah,
and they also found another woman to be happy with. Yeah. Like they have a family.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, yeah. I get
that's
that.
Also why it makes a nice story. It lets her think her family went somewhere. You know, she can say, oh, my kids and my husband are in a better place.
Yeah.
Which Skeptic Nora could never admit, because Skeptic Nora doesn't believe in heaven and hell.
See, that's the other thing. Like, a credit to your perspective on it is that she's always been steadfastly true to herself. She's no bullshit.
Yeah.
But maybe not. I mean, maybe she does lie to herself. I think we see her lie quite a few times to herself. She tries to convince herself that she doesn't care about certain things.
Mm-hmm.
When she has the argument with Kevin in the hotel room, I think she was trying to, like, say, you know, my kids aren't here and I am dealing with this. But
yeah.
I think she was in denial a bit about, like, how much pain she was feeling and how much attachment she feels to people in this world when she was telling the LADR people.
Yeah.
Like, she was ready to go over.
I agree.
And that other doctor was like, yeah, she's lying. She's full of shit. She still has attachments. Man. Also, Demolition Man. That little ice sculpture. I like all the closure we got from all the characters.
Yeah.
And I think it just, you know, we didn't even see really anyone except Lori.
But Kevin talked about all of them.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, and I like that she asked, she's like, what was that, all lies? And she's like, no, all that was true.
Yeah.
So we know what happened to his son. We know what happened to his daughter. Like I liked all of that stuff. I liked that we got that.
We and get the feel for all of them.
I didn't feel cheated by it. I don't feel cheated just because they had to have someone relay it.
Yeah.
Because the story was about Kevin and Nora, who were the strongest characters in the show.
Yeah.
This is also an example of how shows evolve, because they knew what they had in Justin Theroux and Carrie Coon for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't tell me that this was always the plan.
No.
Like, that this was more of an ensemble piece, and they focused on the most interesting story, which is Kevin and Nora. I mean, they didn't have a
story for season 2 until, like, they just did the book for season 1.
Yeah.
And then once it was like, oh, we want season 2, they're like, all right, what are we going to do here?
Yeah, yeah. So I think that that's an example of everybody wants their TV to be a thing where someone it's all planned out and it all comes to this perfect ending, but that was not true of Breaking Bad.
Mm.
It's not true of Better Call Saul. It's not how Vince Gilligan
Sopranos.
Works. It's not how Damon Lindelof works. It's not how David Chase works. It's not how a lot of the great showrunners work.
Nobody works that way.
I don't think Noah Hawley works that way.
No.
And I think that we all want this because we're also afraid of an ending flubbing. We're also afraid of a flubbed ending ruining our show for us. And it has happened. Absolutely. But the creativity and the possibilities you gain from leaving things open so that when you can drive into something, you find something and you can drive into an ending like this is worth the occasional flub, I think. And that's not a perspective I would have had a few years ago.
Yeah.
It's definitely one I've come to the more I watch TV that, you know what, occasionally a drop ball is worth it if you get these perfect catches.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to have to let this show go.
Yep.
And
you're going to have to deal with grief, depression, and irreconcilable grief.
That's okay. That's okay, because I think I got something wonderful, beautiful, and creative. This is one of the most fascinating shows I've seen this decade, and I'm pretty excited I got to talk about that here.
Yeah. You know what we should do?
What?
We should start a Lion sex cult.
Yeah! All right, next week, we're going to start a Lion sex cult. I hope you guys tune in for that, and we're also going to be talking about the ATX TV Fest. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you, Grant.
And until next week,
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.